You're listening to Bruce Downs, The Catholic Guy on cradio.org.au. This program was originally recorded for ACC TV.
Wherever you are around the world today, it's great you can be here with us. Well, today I'm doing a different kind of a message. Today I'm going to talk about what do people think who don't go to church? What are they thinking? Why are some of the reasons why they don't turn up in our churches, in our communities, in our parishes, wherever we are? The truth is they're saying something to us. They're saying something to us about their relationship with God and the fact that very possibly we're not speaking a language or communicating to them in a manner that they understand. Some of the stuff in this is a bit tough to hear because it causes us who are in the Christian community to have to change. Well, that's what I'm going to talk about today. So go get your family, get your friends, get everybody you love. Sit back, relax, enjoy yourself. I know today's message is going to bless you. Well, today's culture building talk, the title of it is Knowing What the Unchurched Think. Knowing What the Unchurched Think. If you don't know what they think, you can't reach them. So what do they think? What are they feeling? What are the people who don't go to church? What is in their mind? And we're surrounded by them, aren't we? My desire is that you would realize that every encounter at church with people makes an impression that will either drive them away or give faith a chance to be heard and considered. While we may not have them at hello, they will wonder what's different about our hello and be open to listening. Now, if you have a Bible, turn with me to 1 Samuel 16, verse 1. Now, as you know, I'm not going to give you the Bible and I'm not going to read them on the screens anymore. I just want you to either look on your computer or I'll read it to you. Bring a Bible each week, either electronic or otherwise. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. Now, the background of this story is that God had never wanted to give the people of Israel, 1 Samuel chapter 16, God had never wanted to give the people of Israel a king. But when they looked around at all the other nations around them, all the other nations had kings. And they used to call out to God all the time, "We want a king, we want a king." And in the end, God reneged and he gave them what they wanted, but he said to them, "This will not in the end go well for you." And the very first king was this guy named King Saul. And it says that King Saul stood head and shoulders above everyone else, was a good-looking fella. But in time, his heart became corrupt and the anointing of God was lifted from him. So one day, God comes along to the prophet Samuel and gives him the task of anointing the next king. But here's the thing, Samuel is still the king, right? And so Samuel's a little worried that he's going to get himself killed if he goes and anoints another king. So we pick it up in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you grieve over Saul, the king who's gone corrupt? I've rejected him from being king over Israel. Fill your horn with oil and set out. I will send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I've provided for myself a king among his sons." Samuel said, "How can I go? If Saul hears of it, he'll kill me." And the Lord said, "Take a heifer with you and say, 'I've come to sacrifice to the Lord.' Invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what you shall do, and you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you." So go to this dinner. I'm going to anoint someone else and I'm going to show you. Right? Now, here's an interesting verse 3. As we read over and over in the scriptures, God seems to always give direction, doesn't he? But he doesn't give the final result. He always wants you to walk. What he wants you to do is, "What I want you to do is sell your house in Perth. I want you to go to Sydney. I want you to start living, then I'll show you, and then I'll provide for you." And we read it in the scriptures all the time. This week, on this last Thursday, was the 7th of November. 42 years ago, on the 7th of November, at 8:45 at night, in the infant Jesus kindergarten, I committed my life to Christ, and a priest by the name of Father Des prayed for me. And he's very elderly now, and he was in his 40s, but he's really quite elderly now and frail. And I rang him, and I said to him when he picked up the phone, "I blame you for all of this. Because if you hadn't pursued me when I was just a teenager, you know, look at what happened because you chased me." And so I was just telling him some of the stories of what's happened, and particularly in these last few weeks, and the miracle stories of what God has been doing in these last few weeks. And he said to me, he said, listening to the story that you're telling of what's happening among this group of people, he said, it's like reading the scriptures, isn't it? Of God calling, you walking, and then after the event, him then giving you the detail on the way. See, he tells us direction, then wants us to walk in a shaky way, and then gives us assurance that he's with us in time. And we see that. So verse 2, Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears of it, he'll kill me. And the Lord said, take a heifer with you and say, I've come to sacrifice the Lord. Verse 3, invite Jesse to the sacrifice and I will show you what you shall do. And you shall anoint for me the one whom I name to you. Samuel did what the Lord commanded and came to Bethlehem. The elders of the Lord came to meet him trembling and said, do you come peaceably? And he said, peaceably, I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And when they came, he looked on Eliab, who was the oldest, and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is now before me. Verse 7, key verse. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. And if you read the rest of the story, he runs out of sons. And Samuel says to him, have you got another son? And he says, well, I've got one out the back. He says, well, I'm not going on until you bring that one. Verse 11, Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest, but he's keeping the sheep. And Samuel said to Jesse, send and bring him, for we will not sit down until he comes here. He sent and brought him in. Now he was ruddy and had beautiful eyes and was handsome. And the Lord said, rise and anoint him, for this is the one. I was once described as ruddy and with beautiful eyes and handsome. No, it's never happened. So someone gets anointed who was not chosen, right? But that verse 7 is absolutely, go back to verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look on the appearance or the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For the Lord does not see as mortals see. They look on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. This verse gives us an amazing insight into reaching the unchurched and can be applied very well into our day. And so as we start, it's important for us to understand our clientele, because in a little while, we're going to set up shop, we're going to say to the nation, come on, we're on, because we can share with you a message that we believe in. It's going to be relevant and powerful and meaningful and transformative for your life. And so we're going to, who are our clientele? There's two groups. There's the unchurched on the screen, and these are the have never beens. And then there's the de-church, once went, no longer do. Anybody know any never beens? Anybody here in their family got once went, no longer do? Yeah. Many of us do, don't we? They're the ones we're trying to reach. We're not trying to reach the ones who already go. Now, in the Catholic world, in our country, 88% of people are described there on the screen, right? The unchurched, never been. The de-church, once went, no longer do. That's 88%. We're not after the other 12%. We're not after them. Right? So why are people not coming to church? I can remember when ice creams, I'm so old, were 5 cents. Any of you ever heard of Mr. Whippy? Yes. I remember when Mr. Whippy was five cents. Yes. I remember when computers were only in sci-fi movies. I'm that old. Computing to me in year 10 was this. You got these cards, you punched out the holes, they took them away down to the university, and 7 days later they came back and told you which ones you punched out wrong. That was computing. Right, and that was computing. I remember being very little, and in this little car we had a Vauxhall car, and on the side, when you press the indicator, a little hand would come out and blink, and then the hand would come down. Some of you remember that? Yeah, you really are old. Okay, some of you young people are going, seriously? Right. I remember when boys and dads wore ties to mass every Sunday. I remember when women wore hats to church every Sunday. I remember my mum having a hat box in her room. And I can remember when the local church was a large part of a person's Catholic social world, where church dances and church sports teams were part of weekend activities. I remember that really strongly. I certainly heard of stories of countless older people who met their husbands and wives at dances and social activities. And while it wasn't the only way that people met in the world, it was certainly a big part of a Catholic's life. Today, in the Western Church, Catholic Church, these forms of connection are virtually non-existent in any significant number. Now, I know there was someone to come and say, in my parish, we had a dance and, 100 people came. But what's that prepared to the proportion of the people in the suburb or in the area? So we can always find the person and say, but in my place. I remember doing youth ministry many years ago, and I was talking to about 300 parents one night on the faith of young people. And I was saying, listen, this is the trends that we're seeing. And this man up the back, he said, oh, no, in my parish, we've got a youth group and 50 kids come. And he did, and that was fantastic. But the truth is, we figured out that between 15 and 23, there were 90,000 kids in the city. And when we added up every kid in the whole city of Perth who went to a youth group, it came to 900 in every Catholic parish in the city. And he didn't want to hear that we were struggling. He wanted to hear my parish is doing good, and it was. It was fantastic. So you'll always hear people to say, it wasn't like that for me. For many people now, for many people under 40, they have never known the church on a social level. They've never known the church. The church is where you go on the weekend, even if you don't understand it, particularly for those who get it, go to the church. For many people, the church is just an option where you might get married now. It's a place where funerals are held. It's a place where children are baptized, and the sacraments of communion, confirmation, the sacraments of initiation occur. When the Catholic school says to you, it's time, and you go, and you don't know what they're doing really, but you go, to suggest to people under 40 that the church is a place of social connectedness is nonsense for people today. And yet many churches, in the way they're set up, even though they know it at a cognitive level, are still set up at the level of let's be social, and people have their social connection here. At a heart level. Everybody knows at a cognitive level that's just not the case anymore. It's not the case. So what changed in 50 years? Now, I know some of you are not 50. Well, technology exploded. Transport became far more common. We moved from a world of few options to almost unlimited options. Have a look in the house designs. When my mum and dad built their house 50 years ago, there were 4 plans. And you got to pick one of the 4. Now, there's countless plans. Education. Look at toys. I had a Matchbox car when I was young. And at Christmas, we got one family present for all of us. Now, I know that was just our family, but it was not what it is now. There weren't quite the big shops, giant shops that are just toy shops that there were when I was young. Permanent is no longer necessarily cool or desirable. Change in keeping your options seems to be the value that we hold today. Masses of people around the world have access to news and information in ways that have exposed them to many other forms of thinking and many other values. And so slowly and quite rapidly, we've moved to a worldview which dominates social values in the Western world. And the unchurched think like this, and it's this on the screen. Do whatever you want as long as you're not hurting others, and don't let anyone tell you what to do with your life. These are dominant values. Now the church comes along, authority figures come along, even in the secular world, and they have counter opinions to this because they're a lot more definite. And it's in this massive mix of technological information and material change, the church has remained buffeted. It's not defeated, bearing the truth, but seemingly just not relevant among the clientele who once saw it as part of their world. Pope Benedict XVI in 2008 at Vespers in Washington, in Rome, when he was visiting Rome, He spoke of the fact that we are being challenged by the rise of secularism, the total lack of religion in the world, and belief that it is, and he said, and it's rapidly enveloping the whole of our society and our Western culture, leading to generations of people who don't even know the foundations of faith. And that would be true. He also talked about, and I've mentioned it in recent weeks, he also talked about the rise of materialism, consumerism, and the individualism as being great barriers to faith. And so he said was, what we see is we see people living in this godless world, we see people living in this world of let's have more, and we see people living in this world of whatever I want to do is okay. And they are dominant values in our society. And if we're going to evangelize, if we're going to reach people who don't go to church, that's exactly what we're dealing with. And unless we have ways of talking about that, sharing about that, showing a counter alternative to that, we're not going to make any headway in it whatsoever. The other thing, when people come to what we're going to offer them, they are going to come with a what's in it for me mentality. What's in it for me? That dominates the world's thinking right now. It dominates the world's thinking. What's in it for me? So if we're going to be this evangelizing community, if we're going to love people who don't go, this what's in it for me dominates the world. And it's the mindset of materialism, or the mindset of secularism and consumerism and individualism. You even see people treat the church like this. And I have a lot to do with priests, and my heart goes out to them sometimes on this. We see it very much around parents who want to have their children sacramentalized with baptism or confirmation, or they're getting married. But we see it with parents come and they want their children done. And you hear them even say that, use that phrase, I want them done. And even though they don't practice the faith, even though they don't even necessarily believe, to them it's social, it's like a rite of passage. The family party, the dress, the photos can swamp the meaning of the sacraments. And to priests, that this is, for many of them, I've talked to them, it's heartbreaking, it's insulting to them, and it's caused many of them to really struggle with the whole issue of how do I continue on, because I fundamentally believe in what this is, and yet it's being rubbished by the fact that I've got to do it, or I've got to deal with it in some way. And we see that whole idea of secularism, godlessness around the sacraments from the parents' perspective. We see that whole aspect of materialism, the party, the clothes, and everything else around the sacrament. And we see that whole self of individualism, that it's about me and my family, where the sacraments are about entering into this universal community of church and faith. We see it clearly all around us. Most people come to church, come with very little understanding of the universal understanding of the church, what the mission of the church is, or what the mission of the local church is. So many people come to church, many people look at the church who aren't attending with three kind of mentalities. The first of these mentalities is a service mentality. I have needs, you're here to meet those needs. I've here, Father, I've got needs, you're here to meet those needs. Secondly, they come with an entertainment mentality. And the entertainment mentality says this, and it's not on the screen. An entertainment, please me by how you do it. If it's not good, I'm not coming back. Right? So there's this service mentality. I have needs. You're here to meet those needs. An entertainment mentality that says, please me by how you do it. And the third mentality of the unchurched is this, a relevant mentality. How can I use it in my life? And so what we see is in many Catholic people who don't come to church is they're not coming because they don't see any point to it. They don't understand it. So when we have sermons about prayer and about suffering and about struggle and about around the character and the person of God, about the church and its place, people go, I can't use that. They have this relevant mentality. In other words, what's in it for me? What's in it for me? If we're going to attract people to our buildings, to our activities in our homes and in places in business, we have to understand what the unchurched are thinking. People are not looking to the church for their social needs or even their heart needs or their life needs to be met in any significant number anymore. Now, some people will say, but I know people who are. Of course there are some, but it is the vast minority that are. So just let's pause for a second. Some people who are committed don't like this talk, don't like talking this way, because I've had people say to me, but the church, it's about God, it's not about yourself. Just go. I had someone say to me, I was at a parish mission once, and someone said to me, you know, why do you do it like that? Why don't you just tell them what it is? Someone once wrote to me a letter and said, why do you make people laugh? Just tell your stuff, get off. And Pete, you're not here. Church is not meant to be enjoyable. And you hear some people say it's not about meeting people, it's just about going. It's about maturity and believing. And if you're a mature Christian and a really mature Christian, the way it's presented in the environment and all of that type of stuff, well, the truth is, isn't important. But I would argue that for the most people, even the committed, the things of environment and welcome and communication matter. Why do you take effort at home? Why do you have Christmas dinners? Why do you have birthday parties? Why is your house like your house is? Because those sorts of things matter, don't they? Why is your bedroom the way it is? Because those things matter. So to someone who says, these things don't matter because I'm a mature Christian and you just got to tell it, my response is, that's good for you. It's just not good for the majority. And so you're not wrong, but the truth is, it's good for you, because they're going to ask the question, what's in it for me? Think about people who are critical of the church. All right, you've all got a dozen names each. Yeah, because that's the world. They're not looking at us as really, well, why aren't they here? Whenever you look at someone, you invite them to church, you've got to look with that thought in the back of your mind, because they're thinking, what's in it for me? Because the whole of our world is thinking that way, is it not? As long as you're not hurting anybody, don't let anybody tell you what to do. That is a fundamental value within our world, and the popes of recent have been talking about that value. When I first started this, I felt like the Lord said to me, I want you to reach those disconnected from the church. Our Protestant brothers and sisters would say, reach those disconnected from Jesus. But Jesus established the church to be the vehicle through which he would be proclaimed. So the fundamental, so when you say we're bringing someone to church as a Catholic, you are automatically bringing them to Christ, but the fullness of the expression of that is not, because it isn't Jesus and me, because we are part of a body and not just an individual. And Jesus is our head. We're part of a body. So we have to change people's impression from the very first time we see them. And I'm going to give a talk in a little while about the first impression changes lives. The very first impression changes lives. Can a person who comes along to us and come into our meetings, can they investigate the message of Christ, the church, without feeling pressured to join? Can they all be pointed out? Can they stay hidden in the crowd? Can they come along as often as they need to and not have to do anything? And everybody else does it. I remember when I go to Catholic Guy missions, at the end of the night, I often have on the very first night, very common this is, men who will come to me, men my age and older, who will come to me and they say to you very awkwardly, and I don't know who they are, they don't have to say it to me. They say, I want to talk to you. And as soon as they say it, I know what they're going to say, because it's been said to me so many times. And then they'll say, sheepishly though, I want to apologise. My impression of this before I came was this was going to be tele-evangelist, this was going to be rah-rah, this was going to be happy-clappy, this was going to be jump for Jesus, this was going to be all about money. And tonight was about my life. Tonight was about my wife. I apologise, I didn't know. The first impression is imperative. It's imperative, because the impression will keep many people away. You know the number one reason people don't come to our missions when we travel? The most common reason is, I don't want to go and be shouted at, because I used to go to these missions when I was younger and they were fire and brimstone and I was told I was going to hell and I was a bad person. And I'm 70 years old now, and there's enough individualism that's risen in me over the years. I don't want to be told off. so I'm not coming.
Have you ever been to something that you really enjoy and then at the end of it you stop and you say to yourself, what's next? What do I do now? Well, we get asked that question all the time. And so what we did was we decided to come up with a way of helping people figure out what's next. Every week we send to people an email, and in that email that goes right into your inbox, we send a link that takes you to another talk, another message, some more material that will help you go more deeply in your life and in your walk with God. You also receive with it some reflection notes and study notes. Some people do them by themselves, some people do them with friends, some people even have been doing them with parish groups. I've got to be honest, we never thought that that would happen. And the whole goal of it is to grow more deeply. We're called into an ever-deepening relationship with God. We're not called to be a people that are stagnant, that just believe and then that's the end, but rather a rich relationship with Jesus that takes us to a place where we more deeply surrender our lives and experience the power and the wonder of God in our life, because that is what's next. Well, the Bible tells us very clearly that when we do have needs, that we should come and we should gather people who are in love with God to pray for us and to pray for our needs. Well, sometimes finding people to pray for us can be very difficult. So why don't you do what many people do? Why don't you write to me, and I and my prayer team will pray with you that God blesses you and your circumstances. Now, if you couldn't get to church this week, or for some reason you just don't think you can go right at this minute in your life, I want you to know that the Christian community sometimes does need to make a bigger effort to make you feel welcome, to understand your needs, to understand the things in your life, the circumstances where you are, and the struggles that you go through, because we all go through them. And to those of us who are in the Christian community, it's our responsibility to be open, to be welcome, to be understanding, to be faithful to the teaching of the church, and to do that in a way where we can truly call ourselves church, the good news of Christ being spread across the world. Well, that's it. I'm Bruce Downs. You've been watching The Catholic Guy. We'll see you next time. And remember, wherever you are around the world today, God is never far from you.
You've been listening to Bruce Downs, The Catholic Guy on cradio.org.au. To find out more about The Catholic Guy's discipleship program, visit whatsnext.thecatholicguy.tv. To send Bruce a prayer request, visit the contact section at thecatholicguy.tv. For more talks, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.